Welcome back to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. The nightly news is Jonathan Hickman's new book from Image Comics. The 24-hour news cycle is taken to task as citizen victims of false accusations form an aggressive cult that seeks revenge on the irresponsible reporters and networks that ruin their lives. But the plot of the nightly news is only half of Hickman's singular creation. The conspiracy theories and media issues are presented in a format that is part sequential art, part information guide, wrapped up in a design display that is like no other comic on the market. Today, we talk with Jonathan Hickman about the issues and design of the Nightly News.
The Nightly News is one of those concepts that, you know, it comes to you kind of born completely. It wasn't anything that I struggled over, anything that I labored over for a long time. There wasn't a lot of, you know, plot points to figure out and all that. It kind of just happened. I was telling somebody the other day, you know, Image likes for me to do a real brief kind of one-line movie pitch thing for the Nightly News.
Good luck.
And yeah, I mean, I can't do it, and I feel stupid saying that. The best thing I came up with, I think I told somebody this the other night, was the way that I came up with it was I was watching Reservoir Dogs on TV, and I turned the channel, and the news was on, and there you go.
So there was no story or tipping point story? And I don't even mean in terms of an angry reaction like your characters, but, you know, some story that really kind of rubbed you the wrong way?
Well, I mean, I've been quoted a couple places as saying, you know, Richard Jewell, you know, the fake Olympic bomber thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that was one of the things that, you know, when I was a kid, it kind of opened up my eyes a good bit. But, no, I wouldn't say that there was one specific thing. I think there's just a general discontent, you know, you know, I watch, it's like, you know, I'm addicted to it and stuff like that. I try not to watch the news, you know, but I can't help but watch the news, you know. So, you know, I just think it's a general thing where, you know, I'm just dissatisfied with it. And, you know, it's one of those things where you just dislike it to an extent that, you know, it kind of seeps into some kind of outlet that you want to do. I mean, but I don't have the kind of disdain for it or, you know, hatred that, you know, comes across in my book or anything like that.
Well, where do you get your news from? I mean, are there specific news bodies that you like? I'm a McNeil Lehr fan, and I still call it, even though it's now the PBS NewsHour or the,
right,
the Jim Lehrer NewsHour, I think that, as far as a national television hour, gives you the most real information without, you know, tying into the movie of the week or, you know, the celebrity interview that you're obliged to do and things like that. What do you do? Where do you get your news?
Well, I don't watch, you know, the nightly news anymore. You know, I don't watch any of the main network ones. And I enjoy, you know, like kind of a Gladiator Spectator thing, the pundit shows on,
sure,
on the cable channels. Those are fun to watch, just, you know, to watch people flail around and throw a fit and all that. I would say I get probably 90% of the stuff that I read online now. And I think that's probably a trend that's going to continue and grow and that kind of thing because, you know, you can obviously get, you know, three takes on the same story, you know, I would guess in, you know, 10 minutes if you choose to use your Google properly.
But, you know, that too lends itself to a lot of personal interpretation and that line that seemed to be so clear decades ago. And I'm a real fan of the history of broadcast journalism and, you know, kind of bought into that whole spiel of the Edward R. Murrow days and you know, even, God, during World War II, exposing corruption in governments as we were fighting the war, both on the side of the Allies as well as the Nazis and even ultimately post-war the communists.
Well, I think there's an argument that can be made to say that activism journalism has always existed, but I don't think it's been as obvious as it is right now. I think that people are going into J school and stuff like that with you know, ideas of not just reporting the news and being good newsmen, you know, but actually, I don't know, changing the world or some kind of idiocy like that. So I'll tell you one of my favorite things to do. You know, message boards are dangerous places. And obviously, you know.
Why do you think I don't have one for Word Balloon, man?
That's exactly right. Congratulations on not having one. But one of my favorite things to do is to go to, you know, the two really, really skewed left and right message boards for the Democrats and Republicans in this country. I had to go to Democrat Underground and Free Republic and read the same stories and their takes on them. And, you know, they're both crazy. I mean, I don't... it's a sick spectator sport, you know, I'll concede, but I think it's one of those things that keeps me sane as far as, you know, how I perceive and kind of go forward with my, inform my opinions on, you know, how to believe and, you know, what to think about each story. So, you know, I think it's just very difficult nowadays to wade through all of it, John. I just think it's I think there's a reason why there's a palpable frustration from people.
Unfortunately, and it's interesting because we live in this environment that they refer to as the 24-hour news cycle. In a lot of ways, we might be less informed now than we ever were because of some of the special interests tied to each network, where, you know, General Electric owns NBC. And you're not going to hear much about munitions development because that's the business that GE is in. Or even something as simple as, I remember years ago, 2020 was going to run a story about Disneyland and or the one of the Disney amusement parks accidentally hiring, you know, people that were had criminal records as sexual predators. And they didn't know. And Disney squelched the story and said, no, you're not running that story. It's bad for business.
Well, that's because the guy was in the Mickey costume and you just can't report that. So.
it's
incestuous, John.
Of course.
It is what it's becoming. You know, it is when everybody owns everybody else, you know, there's just not a lot of perspective out there. It's not going to get better. It's going to get much worse.
Do you think the Internet, though, might be a saving grace in terms of getting, you know, the real story? It seems like there are cases where you look at the case with Dan Rather, the thing that got him fired at CBS. You know, somebody comes out and does a little bit more background and discovers some things that were used as proof to show what Bush might have been doing wrong when he was in the National Guard. Things that were used as examples for that made good television pictures. It turns out they were falsifying things. It taints the entire story. In some ways, good and bad. I think pointing out that they were really kind of playing with television tricks to kind of make this story look cooler, but unfortunately the broad stroke of correcting them also nullified the truth that they had in that story as well.
Yeah, I mean, the truth became completely irrelevant. I mean,
yes.
It didn't matter if there was any. But, you know, that's the thing, and I emailed you when we were, you know, trading emails. This is one of the things that I was talking about. I loathe that thing where they stand by the story even though the facts may be incorrect. You know, that whole phrase just drives me nuts. You know, it's insulting. You know, they deserve the drop in viewership that they're getting.
Sure.
I mean, they have earned it, you know, so.
Well, you point out, because I read this in, it was an issue too, that Newsweek got rid of their fact-checking department. Time and Newsweek, you say, got rid of their fact-checking departments. I found that shocking, especially considering Newsweek had just gotten caught in a questionable claim that the, you know, soldiers at Gitmo were peeing on the Koran. And this was, you know, part of their, you know, story of look how badly the prisoners are being treated at Gitmo.
Well, the Newsweek, they got rid of their guys in like 97, 98.
Okay.
I mean, it's not a recent thing. It's a cost-cutting thing that, you know, it's just now coming to light because people are beginning to get really, really skeptical, you know, and you know, like I was telling you, it's not going to come back either. They can't afford it. I mean, these companies are bleeding money because they're losing subscribers and losing readers because they've already lost legitimacy. So I don't think it's, you know, I certainly don't think it's going to get better. I mean, it's hilarious to me that the National Enquirer has a better fact-checking department than Newsweek simply because they have one.
I know that media consolidation is something you bring up, and I think that's important, and people don't realize that. You know, it really is the same company under a bunch of different names when, you know, and it always makes me laugh. There was the whole thing just a couple months ago about O.J., you know, had in his book. And,
right.
And you know, and or yeah, if I did it, this is how I was going to would have done it.
Right.
Fox was going to do the TV show about it. And suddenly people dug around and realized, hey, you know, the book company publishing this is doing business with Fox. And then, of course, you have people like Bill O'Reilly have the gall to say, we're reporting, we don't like this, it's happening on the Fox network, which has nothing to do with the Fox News channel. And it's like, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
How stupid do you think we are that you can even make that claim?
Oh, they think we're pretty stupid.
Apparently.
Yeah.
Well, and unfortunately, it even falls from the top because you get this claim as well from the Bush administration, too. And I don't mean to get partisan, but that they believe, you know, that their mantra is, it doesn't matter what the facts say. We are going to go with the story as we see fit, and we will make the facts fit our story.
Yeah, do you remember when the Post got busted blackmailing that guy? And they got the reporter on tape saying, this is what we do. We destroy people without getting caught and without it being litigious. That's journalism, man. That's journalism.
Wow. And, we really, good luck, I guess, everybody, the average American, because I guess even the watchdogs have their own skeletons in the closet and they're, you know, they have their own agenda. You wonder where you can get the real good information these days.
Well, I mean, I think the internet's great. I think the day that you see internet regulation, like they tried to sneak in last year,
net neutrality.
Yeah.
I think anti-net neutrality.
Right. Well, I mean, if that happens, then
we're screwed.
I don't know what to think. But if as long as that doesn't happen, I hold out hope for the web and stuff like that.
Well, let's get to the design of the book. I didn't mean to get into a whole vibe, but that is the.
Oh, that's okay. You can tell you are interested in it. That's cool.
Well, and being a broadcaster as well, my day job and stuff. I agree, and it does. It depresses me that the industry that I wanted to get into is changing as ugly as it is, and that what used to be. You know, things that you were taught in school about how, well, the truth above all and seek out the truth, you know, doesn't seem to be as important as getting your own agenda across. And as you say with a lot of other people, people want to get in to be opinion leaders and opinion makers rather than really finding out the truth of a story.
Yeah, well, I mean, truth is tertiary. I mean, the primary thing is your point, you know, the point that either the organization or the journalist has himself, and the second one is, you know, they want to look good on TV. So.
Well, now, you know, the layout, obviously, for your book is so eye-catching and so different and, I think, exciting for people that come to comics for the art as much as the story. You know, they remind me of, like, really public service messages in a good way.
Well, if you were to ask me which thing I was more excited about, you know, which thing do I feel is more important about the comic? Not that there's anything really important about the comic anyway. I'm not like some self-important love myself kind of person anyway, but I'm much more interested, I'm much more proud of me trying to tell a story in a different manner than I am about the story did Nightly News, and I feel like if I do have anything to contribute comic wise you know, to the community and all that, I think that it is that I'm trying to do something different narrative wise so.
It sounds like you'd like to follow through and build on this and continue in at least. I'm not really even sure where are you going as far as design beyond Nightly News?
Well, my background is you know, graphic design. Mm-hmm. You know, doing comics is, you know, 3 months old, right? I mean, I've got years experience doing graphic design work. I don't have any doing comic stuff, even though, you know, comics is obviously what I'm passionate about, what I've always wanted to do. It is my goal. You know, one of the things I'm trying to do is to really marry up, you know, what you can do graphic design-wise and what how you can integrate that into comics. And I think that the Nightly News is a good first try. It certainly is not where I want to end up. It certainly isn't as far as I want to take it. But, you know, this is kind of I think it's a new thing to comics. I have to gradually take kind of baby steps into the direction that I want it to end up. So I'm not there yet, but I feel good about, you know, kind of the first step.
I heard you mention in your Around Comics interview Joe Casey, and Joe, especially on covers, I think, is a guy that clearly thinks along the same lines you do in terms of very interesting ideas and something different and something more eye-catching. Have you had any conversations with Joe? Have you talked to him about the book at all?
No, I don't know anybody in comics.
Okay.
I don't. you know, I've talked to very few people in the business, so I'm kind of looking forward to con season this year so I can meet some people.
Sure.
But no, it is my perspective is purely that of somebody that's bought comics, and it's my opinion of what they were trying to do in the work, and I think it's pretty obvious that what the direction Joe Casey was trying to go in with you know, Poptopia and the Intimates and, you know, that kind of stuff. I just don't think that you can be a I don't think you can pull that off if you're not kind of a one-man band or it's not being directed by one person, because it's kind of got to be a cohesive thing.
What did the Image guys, what kind of feedback have you gotten from those guys since the book is now underway?
Pretty good. I mean, they're pretty hands-off because, mm-hmm. you know, they like it to be, you know, creative-driven. And, you know, every time I call them, I've got like 1,000 questions. So I know I've got to be irritating because I don't know what I'm doing. But, you know, they've been very supportive, that they like the book. They feel pretty good about how the book's doing, because I was talking to them the other day, and orders for issue 3 are higher than orders for issue 2.
Excellent.
So, and they say, you know, that's a pretty rare thing. I guess I believe them. I should believe them. So I'm feeling pretty good about it. You know, I like it that they just let me do my thing. I haven't heard anything about, you know, from them about what I should or shouldn't do, or, you know, any content worries or anything like that. I don't think that they care. I'll interpret that as them being supportive.
Okay.
So, but I mean, Image has been great. I just don't have anything to compare it to, I would say, John. You know, I don't know what it's like to work with an editor. I don't know what it's like to. I may have it better than I'll ever have it again. I don't have anything to compare it against.
Well, maybe you.
I'm,
you know,
happy though.
Maybe you stick to doing your own books then. I mean, you know, who knows? You won Comic Book Idol?
No, I came in like second. The guy that won it is his name is Patrick Scherberger. He's a really good guy. He's working at Marvel.
Oh, okay. And but Quesada saw your entry, and I think at first you guys kind of had a bit of a correspondence, and you even, it's funny, you mentioned you took the Marvel test as well.
Yeah, I sucked that up. I did. It was terrible. I gave him it was a Bendis script for like Ultimate Spider-Man, and the funny thing is I'd never read Brian Bendis before that day. It was like Ultimate Spider-Man, whatever, I don't know, there was some new character in it with long blonde hair, I can't remember. God, I can't even remember his name. Anyway, and it had the Ultimate X-Men in it or whatever, and they were like, you know, draw these 6 pages. And I was like, good God, this is wordy, you know? And it was like 16 panels on the page or something like that. And so, I just turned in like this this thing that's, you know, looked like probably 20 other Marvel guys in the 80s would have done or something like that. It was so bad. It was like one of those lessons that you have to kind of go through, is like, do it your own way kind of thing.
Well, do you envision a time where your sense of design and storytelling could marry itself to a mainstream idea like a Spider-Man or a Superman or something like that?
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, I don't, look, I am not a... I love Marvel and DC. I mean, I buy their books and stuff like that. I think they're the best superhero comics in the world. I, a lot of people give them a lot of grief for, you know, only doing superhero books, but, you know, they do them better than anybody else.
Sure.
So, you know, people shouldn't really bitch about that. You know, they should go out and buy, you know, French comics if they want romance books or something, I guess. I don't know. The thing that I probably would be interested in doing is I'd like to see what it would be like to work with an editor, you know, place limitations on yourself and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be nice. But I don't know. I mean, look, the guys that I don't know anybody at DC, and the only people I've ever spoken to at Marvel were, you know, a couple of emails with Quesada, and I've met C.B. Cebulski.
Okay.
But, you know, those are art guys. They have taste. You know, I haven't heard negative things, so...
I saw you mention guys like Paul Pope and Bill Sienkiewicz,
yeah.
And I can see that influence in your work. People have compared your work to Brian Woods, and that's understandable with his Channel Zero books, and presenting ideas in a non-sequential way next to your sequential art.
Mm-hmm.
So who are your design influences? I guess would be my question.
I like web people. I like Joshua Davis, who's a really, really big deal. He does a lot of commercial work. I like Mike Cena and Mike Young. They do a lot of commercial work, and they're very, very good. I like, about 50 Swedish Scandinavian guys. They're, they seem to produce. Apparently there's a school out there that just cranks them out left and right. Let's see, who else do I like? A guy named Bradley Grosh. He's pretty amazing. There's a guy, Joshua something down in Florida. His website's like Hydro 74, and I rip him off all the time. He's amazing. So.
You know, I would love to see, and it's so funny because I know comic book purists get all upset about any time, you talk about a comic and immediately try to put it in a different medium. Mm-hmm. But I would love to see almost a flash presentation of the Nightly News, almost done as a PowerPoint, because it does have that feel to it. And it's amazing that I think you achieve a good narrative and good information in a format that you would think would lend itself with motion. Do you think, in terms of ever wanting to see a full motion version of what you're doing in the static form of comic pages?
Well, I mean, like the Times, I'm, got the Hollywood people calling and stuff like that. So, and I'm actually, that sounds terrible, but I'm with the company that's Bendis and all them were with, Circle of Confusion.
Oh, okay.
I got picked up by those guys the Friday after my book came out on Monday.
Oh, that's great.
I mean, on Wednesday.
Congratulations, so, that's great.
Well, I mean, it's cool, and I'm very excited about working with them and all that kind of stuff. And obviously from my background in advertising and all that, it's not like video is a foreign format to me or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just kind of crazy the way that, development and all that works. I mean, my book, this is a funny story, my book was like Fox's development arm or whatever.
Okay.
For movies or whatever. They looked at and rejected the Nightly News as a property before it had even been published. it's just kind of craziness, that's kind of going on right now and comics and Hollywood and all that kind of, buying up properties and all that kind of stuff. And I'm just trying to keep a cool head about it because, I mean, at the end of the day, I just want to be able to tell the stories that I've always wanted to tell, and I've got a whole catalog of stuff that I want to do. And, it's all about keeping perspective, and I think I'm old enough that I have that now. So.
Well, and I almost wonder, too, movies aside, that I almost see it more as a digital comic that, would, again, incorporate more PowerPoint kind of animation and movement to it, rather than, again, just like seeing it on the page. And I wonder if your mind is heading in that direction as well. We hear about digital comics. I think it's an inevitability once they figure out a handheld way of reading it and making it, warm and fuzzy for someone to kind of get their hands on. But I think it will also have to show some innovation. It can't just be the words and pictures on a digital screen versus on a printed page. It can, but I think what might make it more exciting is if someone like yourself comes in with a different way of storytelling and a way that storytelling can be improved if it's being presented in kind of this flash digital way.
Well, I think I love books, and I know that there are people out there that are touting digital format for the page and all that, and I think I've heard some people talk about that on your show or something like that about how they feel like it's pretty close and all that, but I think for it to work, I think there's going to have to be a drilling down kind of aspect of it. For example, if you were Marvel and you were developing the monthly digital episode or whatever of Spider-Man, I think that it would need a continuity drill down, because there's a depth in comics that doesn't get used as much anymore because they keep reinventing it every 5 years. I think that's probably one of the problems that DC and Marvel actually have, that they're kind of messing up, I mean, you've got, 34 years of history and you kind of throw it out of the window with a reboot and stuff like that. I think the cool thing to do would be able to, if you're on panel 6 of page 3 of the current, episode or whatever, and there's a reference to, Dark Side, whatever.
Sure.
And you could drill down and see all the different episodes that Dark Side appears in. You get the bio of it, and you can, you know, see how Superman and Dark Side have interacted before and crap like that. See, I think that's the real kind of power of something like that. I think that's how you exploit that, not just transferring it to a digital format.
No, I agree with that.
You know, so, but, you know, what do I know?
Well, I think you know a lot. I another thing, too, looking at the way you lay out pages, it reminds me of the way Bloomberg is presenting its news on television now, with not only the constant motion of whatever is going on in a newscast, but all the graphs and all the other information that they're giving. Your difference, obviously, is that all that information is supporting the story.
Sure. I'm terrified of what's going to happen whenever all these news channels have the real estate of HD.
They'll fuck it up, don't worry.
You know, it's like, do you watch sports, any?
Sure, of course.
Did you ever catch the, ESPN Full Circle whenever they do, like, the Miami-Florida State game or something like that, and they've got it on every channel?
Yes.
And there's, like, the one channel, maybe it's ESPN News or maybe it's ESPNU, I don't know, where they've got, like, both quarterback and both head coach cam and the sky cam all on the same, you know, screen.
Yep.
And it's completely unwatchable. You know?
I've seen them do that with NASCAR too.
So I don't see the appeal of it, you know. So,
well, they're playing with the toys. They got to figure out how to best use them still.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's all development time, but you know, I think the digital age is about drilling down and getting more immersive, not getting more divided. But, you know, that's again my opinion.
Well, let's look at characters in your story, because I like the way the characters are drawn. The uniformity of the press and believing in what they do. The government has a very specific voice as well. And the cultists have very interesting perspectives. And I appreciate the different backgrounds that they come from coming into this cult.
You know, the cult people are all based on specific stories that are real. Each member is based on a, you know, story gone wrong and it messing up somebody's life. I'll pretty much reveal all those at some point in time.
Okay.
The politicians obviously are, that hasn't been revealed yet, but that stuff's pretty obvious as well. But the Cronkite thing is pretty interesting because, the Cronkite type character.
Yes.
Whatever. you know, that speech, I don't know if you heard me tell the Around Comics guys, that's a listed speech of his that he gave to like a UN, at a UN seminar.
No, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. It was very little editing, you know. That's a Cronkite speech.
Almost
verbatim. And I actually took out, like, the really, really, the stuff that I thought nobody would buy. Like, he throws out New World Order in his speech and stuff like that. You know, the guy is, they did a great, great job of keeping his mouth shut for years.
Wow, you got to send me this speech now, man, because
it's online, man. It's a PDF. I'll send it to you.
Because I did. I'm one of those guys that grew up really buying into the fact Walter Cronkite, one of the most trusted man in America.
Yeah, it's horseshit. It's horseshit. I mean, it's a joke that's the guy that followed Murrow when you look back and you read all the stuff that Cronkite said now. And, you know, maybe we, you know, thanks to Clooney and et al., you know, maybe we love Murrow too much, but I don't think so. I think he was kind of the last of a generation.
Oh, I agree with you, and I'm a huge Murrow fan. Have you read the Ann Sperber biography of Murrow?
I don't think so.
Okay, it came out in the 80s.
I was buried in so much reading. I bought way more books than I actually read, but I don't think I have that, and I don't think I cracked anything like that open.
I think that generation, though, was the last good generation of real, honest journalists who really did have more information than they probably should have had, and a lot of stories that got squelched because they stood in the way of world politics.
Sure. I read an interesting thing talking about how many journalists the CIA had on its payroll at one time.
Sure.
During the Cold War.
Yep.
Like over 600 or something like that. Amazing. But, you know. I mean, they were acting as case officers and stuff like that. I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous. But.
Unbelievable. Well, it's an entertaining read, John, and I think it's an eye-opening design And it's an ambitious read, and I think people will appreciate its denseness in information and its innovations in storytelling. And I wish you luck. How long is this first arc going to be, or only arc? How long is the series?
It ends. It's six issues.
Okay.
So, and then I'm leaving that, and I'm going on to something else. I kind of know what I'm doing. It'll be either a kind of a space opera thing or a historical kind of thing. So, told in the same kind of format. I mean, I would say more advanced than the Nightly News, but. Response has been really good, John. I've been kind of blown away. I was expecting people to love it or hate it. You know, it's kind of one of those books that you would kind of expect that response.
Sure.
Because why be boring? but I haven't gotten the hate it that much. I mean, sure, some people don't like it, preachy, pretentious, you know, all that kind of stuff. But. You know, I think response has been pretty amazing, especially for my first work. I'm pretty proud of it.
Well, I think that's great, man. I think, like you say, and I agree with you, there's nothing wrong with traditional superhero stories and traditional comic book stories. But I also think readers reach a certain age where they are looking for something different and something challenging. And I think you deliver it in a very good way with Nightly News, and I congratulate you because it's a very interesting read. It's a smart read, and it spurs debate. It shows what the comic format can do in the right hands, and I'm glad to see people like you are taking it to the next level.
Well, I think that thank you for that, and I think that we're getting ready. Yeah, I know a lot of people like to talk about golden generations and silver generations and all that kind of stuff. I think that the comics being produced right now by Americans are about as good as they've ever been.
Yep.
I think they're getting ready to get even better as we kind of make a segue into even more mainstream acceptance and, you know, kind of the stuff that you can get away with and, you know, actually being compensated and you can live and actually think about your comics as opposed to grind it out. I just think there's a lot of amazing work being done. And it's encouraging that, you know, all the really good guys from the last kind of generation, you know, are still making great comics. So, you know, I think it's an exciting time. I'm looking forward to continuing to tell my stories, and I'll probably do that through Image. I don't see why not. They've been very good to me. And I'd like to do something with Marvel or DC just because it'd be nice to work with editorial, and it'd be, you know, I grew up reading that stuff. I'd like to have a shot at it sometime. But, you know, the whole goal is to produce more of my stuff, you know, because that's what I've always wanted to do.
Are there areas of journalism, not in terms of as an observer in the case of Nightly News, but are there news stories that you want to cover and any type of, you know, real stories that you want to cover or fact, you know, factual cases in this format?
Like, do I want to do a book on, you know, X story out of Iraq?
Look at Sacco, like a guy like Joe Sacco, who I love. I mean, I think he's a really interesting cartoonist and really, you know, brings a very interesting level of journalism to all of his works.
Yeah. Have you heard this interview that David Milch gave at like MIT or Yale or something like that?
No.
All right, it's floating around. I think you can find a link on, like, the Engine or something like that.
Okay.
It's about a two-hour interview that he gave, and he talks about how he's not going to do any more series set in modern time because of the way that, you know, stories are presented and the way that they're reflected through popular culture now and the way that, you know, they're spun in the media. And so he's going to almost do all historical or ambiguous dated stuff from here on out because he thinks that it hurts the narrative for it to be perceived in modern times because people are always wanting to make allegorical, you know, connections to
sure.
modern day. And I heard him say that, and I could relate, and I looked in my book at all the other stories that I want to tell, and it's all, you know, it's not current events. It's all historical stuff that reflects current events kind of stuff.
Okay.
And I think that that's probably a good way to go because, you know, the only thing that's been irritating about the Nightly News is that people read into it things that they shouldn't read into it.
What are the misconceptions of the nightly news?
Well, I mean, the main one is that this is my opinion. The main character reflects my personal opinions, you know, which it doesn't. I don't identify with with the main character at all. I don't. As a general rule, I'm not writing wise. I'm not a big believer in writing stories that reflect my opinion. I'm more about presenting an idea, but I'm really more about asking questions than I am about answering them. And I think that's a storytelling thing that, you know, is, I think it's important to write like that. You know, I think it's important to ask questions, not answer them. But I know that there are people that completely disagree with that.
Well, John, this is great, man. I appreciate it. And Nightly News is coming out through Image Comics. Issue 3 will be out around the time of the release of this interview, and I hope you check it out and enjoy the other 3. And like I said, I look forward to your next project as well.
Well, thanks for having me on.
That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks a lot for listening. This is John Suntress. Don't forget, you can find Word Balloon all over the web. Our MySpace page is myspace.com/wordballoon. We're also at the Comic Space community, comicspace.com/wordballoon. And you can find us at Odeo, Podcast Alley, Podcast Pickle, all the various podcatchers. We're also at iTunes, and if you'd like to leave a review or vote for us at Podcast Alley or an iTunes review, we're always appreciative of that. If you have any questions or comments about the show, you can reach me directly at my website, wordballoon.com. You can email me, john@wordballoon.com. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2007.